I'm here with Alexander Mercurs, editor-in-chief of the Duran. Alexander, let's talk about the Russian economy. And let me read you the first couple of paragraphs from a Tom Lungo post from the other day from Gold, Goats, and Guns. The title of the post is Stay Strong, Go Long, Bulletproof, Russia Becomes Contrarian Haven. From the article, it's a tough road ahead being a contrarian on Russia. This is especially true today when the entirety of the US and European political system is aligned to demonize Russia at nearly every level. And the main reason for this is that Russia, under President Vladimir Putin, refuses to do the West's bidding, both at home and abroad. The central tenet of US foreign policy is that US concerns, no matter where they are supreme and everyone else's are subordinate. Russia, under Putin, doesn't play that game. He hasn't for nearly 20 years now. This is not to say, of course, that objectively speaking, Putin is a good man or even a good leader. In studying Putin for the past 7 years, I've come to one inescapable conclusion. He was exactly the leader Russia needed to dig the country out of the abyss it found itself in when he took over. He is exactly the kind of leader Russia needs to guide it through the next period of history. So much analysis of Putin and Russia is so thoroughly ideologically tainted that, on that basis alone, it should be dismissed out of hand. And it has been successful enough that even the best analysts who are truly skeptical of the US narrative still get some of the basics about Russia and Putin horribly wrong. I've been recommending Russia as an investment to people since early 2015 and its state-owned gas giant Gazprom since mid-2014. I haven't wavered in that recommendation despite the ups and downs. Alexander, what do you make of the first opening couple paragraphs from Tom's post? And on a very, very quick side note, Putin was the type of leader Russia needed. I see a lot of parallels with Trump, whether you like Trump or not. I think that the US kind of got a Trump president at the time that they needed someone to take on the propaganda and the fake news and the deep state and the endless wars as well. That's just on a side note. As I was reading Tom's article, I kind of drew some parallels. So Alexander, get into it.
Well, quickly on Trump and Putin, it's very striking that the people who hate the most stridently are the same people. You find the same people in America who hate both Trump and Putin, and I suspect for the same reasons, because they both, in their very different ways and coming from their very different backgrounds and with their very different approaches, challenge the established neocon, neoliberal, globalist, interventionist, if you like, orthodoxies. Now, let's, however, focus on Russia. And can I first of all say something here, which is that Tom Longo is absolutely right that it's very difficult to be contrarian on Russia. You come up against an enormous amount of disbelief and, frankly, sometimes abuse if you say things which go against the flow of any part of the Russian narrative, including and especially in some ways the economic part of the Russian narrative. Tom Luongo is one of the very few people who have done this. And I'm going to say it straightforwardly and frankly, he is one of the very few people who discusses the Russian economy who I take seriously. You can count the number of worthwhile Russia economic analysts almost on the fingers of your hands. I mean, there are very few. And Tom Longo has unquestionably been right. And to illustrate that, all you need to do is to go back the 7 years that he's been writing on this subject, compare what he has been saying over that period with what has happened and what the establishment orthodoxy has been saying. I remember how back in 2014, the universal assumption was when the oil prices fell and the sanctions were imposed, that the coal country's economy was just going to completely collapse like a house of cards, that Russia was, in the words of Barack Obama, the country that didn't make anything, that in the words of John McCain, it was just a glorified gas station, that the other people, I remember saying that the ruble was just a sort of funny money currency that wasn't going to be taken seriously. I remember reading a long piece in Der Spiegel based upon some of the US embassy cables that WikiLeaks was publishing about how Gazprom wasn't a real company at all. It was just some sort of combination mafia racket, piggy bank of Putin and his cronies, and that it wasn't really operating like a genuine company. I remember all of those things. And where do we stand now? We stand with Russia, with its economy still there. It runs a big trade surplus. It has a very strong budget surplus. The ruble, as Tom Longo correctly says, has become increasingly stable and is becoming increasingly widely used, not just domestically within Russia, but this may surprise some of our viewers, in an increasing number of international transactions. The country's financial reserves have been steadily growing. And on top of everything else, Russia's becoming an increasingly attractive investment opportunity, because with a stable currency, a falling inflation rate, which is now securely and stably in, you know, in single figures, and when I say single figures, you know, in the, around the 3-4% target that the central bank had run, and with positive real interest rates. Everywhere else we get negative interest rates. It's actually becoming an attractive investment opportunity. You can't say it more simply than this. Tom Longo has been right. The few other commentators on this subject, amongst whom, by the way, I include myself, who think like him, have also been right. And the hundreds of thousands of others who have been predicting regularly catastrophe have been wrong. The extraordinary thing is that it's still those hundreds of thousands of others who routinely predict catastrophe who are the ones that continue to be most widely read and publicized. And it's people like us who are, you know, battling away, fighting to get ourselves heard. I do think this is changing. And here I'm going to just say a few things about the state of the Russian economy this year, because it's been widely misunderstood. What happened was that it got reasonably strong growth last year. It was doing, actually, the Russian economy was doing pretty well. But the federal government, the Russian government, announced that it was going to increase the rate of value-added tax at the start of the year. And the Russian Central Bank, partly in response to this, partly in response to some nervousness, some jitters that existed because the US government at that time was talking about imposing new sanctions, made a big mistake in the autumn of last year. Tom Longo at the time, by the way, said it was a mistake, which was to increase interest rates in response. Now, that slowed the economy at the start of this year almost to a crawl, with the result that inflation has fallen much faster than the central bank expected. And instead of inflation being close to the central bank's 4% target, it looks like it's going to be more like 3%. Now, the central bank in Russia has come in for a great deal of criticism because of this step which he took. And in fact, there was a very interesting meeting a couple of weeks ago between Vladimir Putin and Elvira Nabulina, who is the chairman of the Russian Central Bank, in which it was quite obvious, if you read between the lines, that he made clear that his unhappiness with some of the steps that she'd taken. And then there was a subsequent meeting the following day with the Russian government, in which Nabulina and the central bank very significantly did not attend that meeting, and where their policies were openly criticized by the Minister of Economics, who's a man called Oreshkin. And then a few days ago, there was a big investment forum in which Putin again, and this time publicly and openly, made criticisms of the central bank. So what we've now seen is that finally, monetary policy in Russia is at last easing, as it should have done. And what we are seeing come this quarter is a very significant uptick in the economy. Growth has been accelerating. Services and industrial production and consumer spending have all been rising. Inflation is still very low. And of course, on top of everything else, we have a largely stable macroeconomic environment. So things look like growth is going to be higher this year than it looked like it was going to be at one point. And going forward into 2020, the situation is looking actually pretty strong. And I'm going to add one last final thing, because Russia is such becoming increasingly such an attractive investment opportunity. And again, read Tom Longo's piece to see how he discusses that. The Russian stock market has been doing actually pretty well. And what we're starting to see is that with property prices being intentionally depressed, the Russians are now putting their savings increasingly in stocks and in actual investment within the economy. And Putin said in this investment forum that he attended a short while ago that the rate of reinvestment in the Russian economy, which was around 17 the mid 2000s, has now gone up to 21.6. He wants to increase it to 25, and that's becoming an achievable target. It will be 27 before very long. So we're seeing investment rising, we're seeing production growing, we see the whole macroeconomic situation remaining stable. As I said, a few people like Tom Longo got it right, most people got it wrong.
All right, so Tom uses the word in the title, bulletproof Russia, Alexander, and he lifts that word bulletproof from a Forbes article.
Yeah.
And simply put, the way Tom phrases the use of the word bulletproof is really neat. I really like the way he positions that word bulletproof, in that he's saying that over the past 5-6 years, you know, ever since, you know, what happened in Ukraine and Crimea, you know, Russia's been attacked on all fronts, whether it's been the US, the EU, sanctions, the IMF, credit agencies, WADA and the Olympic Committee, on all fronts, human rights, on all fronts. You know, Russia's been attacked, and it's been attacked so hard and so aggressively that they've essentially, under Putin's leadership, they've, you know, hunkered down, they got their house in order, and they've become bulletproof. So let me read you an excerpt from Tom's post once again that puts some context onto the word bulletproof, and you can comment to close out the video. So in 2014, when oil prices collapsed, so did the price of Gazprom. The ruble went through a crisis intended to oust Putin from power in revenge for his thwarting the U.S. takeover of Crimea. Putin's deft handling of the ruble crisis and Russia's impeccable national balance sheet allowed both to survive and begin digging the country out of the latest hole placed in front of it. Since then, the U.S. has piled on obstacle after obstacle in front of Russia in the global marketplace for capital. The Magnitsky Act has been used like a bludgeon to scare investors away from the land of the evil Putin. False flags and overt provocations to warn Syria, Ukraine, and the UK have slowed the pace of investment in Russia's capital markets. Gazprom for years languished, both because of the political risks of US pressure in Europe to stop first South Stream and then the Nord Stream 2 pipelines. Frivolous lawsuits from Ukraine, the EU, and the Baltics have dogged the company for years. The EU has changed its laws retroactively, try and gain a legal upper hand on Gazprom's pricing of natural gas, but ultimately none of it has worked. Slowly but surely, Russia's fundamentals and its stable and improving political situation are winning the hearts of investors looking for yield in a yield-free world. An article in Forbes last week documented the shift in sentiment perfectly. They have made themselves bulletproof, says James Baranu, co-head of emerging market debt for Schroeder's investment in New York. They can pay off all their foreign debts with their central bank reserves, plus they're cutting interest rates. The currency is very stable and they have room on the fiscal side to spend on their economy. The first point is something I pointed out in 2015. The numbers were this good then, and yet the ratings agencies like Dutiful, Quislings, cut Russia's rating to junk status. And they did this against fundamentals, like having enough money to pay off the entire country's debt load, public and private. And at the time, at 13.3% debt to GDP ratio. Today, that ratio stands, after a currency crisis, at just 11.8%. Alexander.
Yes. Well, can I just say, I mean, I agree with every point that he's made. That's going to sound rather a bland thing to say, but let me just unpack a couple of some of this, because first of all, about Russia being bulletproof, before we actually discuss what the government has done, let us talk about some of the fundamentals about Russia, which are always there. This is a huge country. It has it has extraordinary riches in terms of natural wealth, natural resources. It's got a massive agricultural system. It is largely, it is in fact essentially food self-sufficient. In fact, it's becoming a food exporter. It is energy self-sufficient. It is a major energy exporter. It is self-sufficient in nearly every raw material you can imagine. It has a highly educated population. It's got a large and very highly trained scientific establishment, and it's actually got quite a lot of very, very advanced industries. This is inherently a strong country if it is managed properly. Now, that is a very big if, because so many countries, and indeed Russia in its past, have not always been managed properly. What has Putin done? Or not just Putin, but the team around him. Well, they have managed the Russian economy properly. They have done things which actually fly against the current orthodoxies in the West, in the sense that they have not pursued demand management, but they are in fact consistent with older established orthodoxies. They have kept balanced budgets. They've avoided debt. They have tried to stamp out bubbles which might emerge in the property markets. They've had real interest rates. They've put away rainy day funds in large reserves. They have been, and of course, when they were faced with the major crisis in 2014 of both the oil price collapse and the sanctions, their response was a major market-oriented reform, which was to float the ruble. I mean, this is something, by the way, which nobody, I think, in the West expected. They all expected that Putin would try to maintain a managed, controlled exchange rate with the ruble, which would drain the currencies, the country's financial reserves. He didn't do that. He actually floated the ruble. He let the market decide what its rate would be. Of course, it fell, but then it stabilized. And now, as all these fundamentals have come through, it has strengthened. So that is what has happened. That is how the Russian economy has become, in Tom Longo's words and in Forbes' words, bulletproof. They've pursued what were ultimately, if extremely conservative, but well thought out policies, fiscal and monetary policies, which have played to the country's enormous underlying strengths in its agriculture, in its industries, in its natural resources, in its population. And that's why it's now becoming such an attractive investment opportunity, because in a world of negative interest rates, of quantitative easing, of credit growth that's gone out of control, of stock market bubbles, of reckless spending and reckless spending proposals, it's a place where things are done as arguably they should be done everywhere.
All right, Alexander Mercurius, Editor-in-Chief of The Durand. Thank you very much. Guys, if you liked this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on that notifications bell to make sure you get notifications every time we publish a new video. Check us out on iTunes and on SoundCloud to get an audio copy of this video. You'll find links in the description box down below. And please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation really means a lot to us, and it really helps this channel out. And check us out on BitChute and on DurandVideo.com. We post all our videos on BitChute, and we also now are posting them to our own platform, DurandVideo.com, which is in beta mode, but is coming along real nicely. And we invite everybody who's watching this video to check it out. You'll find links for those platforms as well in the description box down below. And we post everything on Telegram. Everything we do goes on to Telegram, whether it's the website, whether it's the videos, and Alexander, whether it's stuff that we do on the Durand Shop.
Indeed, sir. But can I just say quickly about the platforms, the new platforms that Alex is talking about? We are very excited about these platforms. We think that they will greatly increase the reach of our service. They will make it easier for us to provide you with access to this analysis that we do, and we strongly encourage you to go and help us and support us with them, because we see them as a huge asset for ourselves and for the Durand and for what we do. But coming to our shop, well, we have these superb, magnificent Durand mugs that you see, and I was talking on this program about a sober, serious government, which is what the Russian government is. Well, it's sober in its economic policies, and it's also sober and realistic in its foreign policies, as this is the man that you see, Sergei Lavrov, its foreign minister. He's on one of our mugs. He embodies realism and sobriety and diplomatic ability. And that is, by the way, why Russia is gaining so much prestige internationally, despite all the things the Americans and their friends are trying to throw at them. It's because ultimately they run realistic policies. So you can get a mug with a picture of this realistic man, and it's a realistic mug. It's beautifully made. It's 15 ounces. It keeps your tea, if that's what you like drinking from it, which is what I like drinking from it. It keeps your tea warm. It keeps your beer, if you prefer beer, cold. It keeps your hot chocolate and your coffee warm also. And it is of the right size to refresh you and make you feel happy. And at the same time, because it is so well made and crafted and of such perfect size, it doesn't feel heavy in your hands. I'd say it's about a third full, and you can see how well I'm balancing it. So these are marvelous Durand mugs. They are complemented by these wonderful Durand shirts, like the long sleeve T-shirt I'm wearing, which is perfect for this cold London weather that we have to experience here in England. 100% cotton. You could see what elegant material it is, how well made it is, with its Durand double-headed eagle there. But of course, we also have other types of shirts. We have our beautiful polo shirts, which are incredibly stylish and comfortable to wear. We have short-sleeved shirts. We have V-neck shirts. We also have hats. We have stickers. We have clothes for every time of year. All of them great to wear, great to be in. So what's holding you back? Support the Durand. Help yourself. Own these great things. Go to our shop. Alex will tell you how to do it.
You'll find a link to the Durand Shop in the description box down below, durandshop.com. And Alexander, I'll also put a discount code for 20% at the checkout. Just put in the code DRN20, that's DRN20, and you'll get a 20% discount on all merchandise. So look for that in the description box as well. Alexander Mercurius, Editor-in-Chief of the Durand, thank you very much. Alexander, it's the holiday season. It's time to get some discounts out.
It certainly is. So right. Also, as I said, don't hold back.
They make great gifts as well.
Everything makes great gifts. They do.
All right, Alexander Metkers, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.